One of the things that happened was one of the developers was messing around in the database, like doing some development, and didn't realize that one of his tabs was in production. Ended up dropping the production database, which if you run a drop command like manually, it will replicate that. So it also dropped the replica. And our COO comes out and is like, why is the site just a white page? And I look and it is. And then I look in our database and there are no tables. And then I look in the replica and there are no tables. And that really could have been like the end of the company.
Hey, everybody. It's Ben Popper, Director of Content, coming at you with a new podcast for the week of November 25th. This week, we had on Brian and Juan from Splice. Instead of our usual setup with some banter, we're just going to do the interview this time. It was a great conversation with Paul, Sarah, and the two guys from Splice. They chewed the fat about some of the new technologies they're trying out. They talked Dart, Flutter, React, Golang, what happens when your database disappears all of a sudden and you have to rebuild it from scratch. So enjoy the conversation and stick around at the end for our community shoutouts.
Hi, everyone. This is Sarah Chist from Stack Overflow. I'm here today with two incredible developers that I've known for a long time, Juan Buritica and Brian Brennan from Splice. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you tell our audience a little bit about what Splice does?
We are a marketplace for samples. So musicians who are creating sample-based productions, or actually like Foley and stuff for commercials and movies as well, can come and download samples from us. We have 2 to 3 million royalty-free samples they can use in their production, loops, one-shots, all sorts of stuff, presets. We also sell VSTs, so these are plugins that go into digital audio workstations that allow people to make different sounds and do all sorts of cool stuff. And then
Hi, I'm Paul. What's a VST?
VST is the actual technology that is used to build plugins. There's a couple, but it's the interface or the software used to plug into DAWs, which are digital audio workstations.
So like a distortion pedal. But could be, a VST could give you like good distortion effects.
Sure. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. And then like EQs or even full instruments. So Serum is one of our most popular ones. And that's basically like a full keyboard. You can make different sounds and tune it and adjust all the waves and all sorts of stuff.
So basically, Splice is a music company, we like to say, with a tech team. We have a few business lines all around music creation.
Okay.
And we are like, our mission is what we say is to enable artists to unleash their creative potential upon the world, which is very aspirational. But we do really believe in enabling artists to make more and better music and also in them getting paid while they do it. Mm-hmm. So that is also something very important.
It's a novel strategy in the arts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Getting people paid.
What's the craziest thing you learned about audio technology that you didn't know before?
So VSTs are a nightmare to build. VSTs is a technology that works in Windows.
Mm-hmm.
VSTs also work in Apple. But then Apple has audio units, which is a similar but different. So building plugins like that is a nightmare.
Wait, because this all runs in the web? Runs in the web?
We have a web app and we have a desktop app.
Okay.
And a mobile app that launched yesterday. So
And these all produce audio?
No. So what's cool about our VSTs is that VSTs can normally be like anywhere from like, you know, $50 to $700. They can be really expensive, which is out of... now we're just turning into a pitch for Splice. But we allow people to do rent-to-own on those. So like they can pay a set fee like, you know, $12, $15, $20 a month. And then they build up equity. And then when they've paid off the amount, they own it. What our desktop app does is sort of manage that licensing. So they can use it before they actually fully own it. So if they want to try out Serum, for example, they can try it out for a month. And if it doesn't work for their workflow, they can stop paying for it rather than paying all the money up front.
Right. So Serum is an instrument. It's a virtual instrument that you can use to, as a synthesizer or to create different sounds.
Woo!
You want to thank you.
There you go.
And then it I think it cost like $400 or $300 originally. And we talked to Steve Duda, who worked with DeadMau5 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
We convinced him to let us rent it because we believe piracy is a problem of accessibility and not like crime.
Mm-hmm.
We made it so that it was $8.99 a month.
I think it's $9.99.
And we started distributing it. And now over the past couple of years, we've added about 30 more plugins. They are all either instruments or they help for mastering. For example, if you wanted our voices to sound a little better on this podcast, you could use some of our like Ozone from iZotope has a bunch of mastering and mixing plugins, which are great. If the audio was mangled, you can also extract. It's a bunch of really cool stuff.
So now, if I'm your user, do I have a digital audio workstation? Or,
yes.
Okay, and I've got Ableton Live or Logic or what am I using?
Yeah, we also do rent to own one called Studio One. So okay. If you don't have a DAW, then you can use Studio One. But
what's a DAW?
Digital Audio Workstation.
Got it.
So previously, before in the 70s, the people had big mastering consoles. They had all
these
those
big things you see on TV.
Yeah, yeah, and then physical rack units they would plug into something. This replicates that in the sort of digital space.
Focusrite.
Focusrite,
interface that you have here. Yeah, it's the way I've learned to explain it well is like Photoshop, but for sound. Mm. You layer sound or samples on top of it. You can add plugins. You can filter it. It's very, very similar.
That's very cool.
Tie this into the world of programming, right? We've got digital assets. We've got plugins. What are you guys doing all day?
In March, specifically, I started focusing on data engineering. Mm. So I became our company's data team. So what I do actually all day is I look at all of our company's data and make sense of it and help our accounting team, our finance team, marketing team, artist team make sense of it. One interesting data set that I'm looking at is we work with a lot of different artists to produce the sample content, for example, that people then go and download. So Boy Wanda, for example, is one of our artist partners. What we would like to know is that people who come in, sign up for Splice, download Boy Wanda, because they come to Splice because they're like, oh, you got the Boy Wanda pack. I'm going to download that.
How does the Boy Wanda pack sound?
Oh, my Wanda. Gosh.
1, 2, 3. Yeah.
Boo. I would buy that. I would totally buy that. Okay, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
I want somebody to remix this episode.
No owl sounds there, though.
Aw.
Cool. That's not an owl. What is that?
That's not an owl.
That's a pigeon, more like.
See, this is why you want to use Splice.
This is the content exactly. The Stack Overflow the listeners
awesome,
come for.
The awesome programmer kit. We're going to break this podcast into stem files and make it incredibly remixable.
Absolutely.
So we can publish it on Splice. And we can publish it on Splice. The full stems, and then people can.
Oh, we should tell people what stems are.
So if you think about what Juan was talking about, in Photoshop, there are those layers. In the same in tracks, there are layers. So you have one line that contains, for example, all of your vocals. Another line that may contain just the snare hits. Another line that contains just the cymbal hits. So the stems would be each of those lines.
We are trying to do something that is novel in tech companies, which is make a solid business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tell us more.
Sounds risky.
Yeah.
So
how are you going to get funding?
Right.
Well, we've gotten so far. it hasn't been easy. I think our last fundraising was challenging because we had actual numbers and people didn't really know how to read many of those things.
It gets way less exciting when it's real.
I know.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Stories are fun.
No, and it's sort of, it's like after the second month of dating someone and you're like, oh, wow, this is a human.
Right.
Yeah, but they snore.
Yeah. Right. So Brian has been working even for, a year and a half as you were a manager as well.
Yeah, it was moonlighting.
just trying to understand a lot of our metrics that made our business and how we model, because we have a subscription business on one end, which is a marketplace, the marketplace of samples. We have our plugins, our leases or rentals, and we have people who are subscribed to one or multiple products, and we really originally couldn't see well into how that worked. And then there's also this, we have a third line of business, which is what we call Studio, which is why Splice was started, inspired by GitHub, right? It was GitHub for musicians from the beginning, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's source control for stems and for audio. And that is, we aspire for it to be a SaaS business or software as a service business.
So you know what's fascinating, listening to you guys, is that you're both engineers. One's a manager, one's day-to-day engineering. All the problems you're describing are about communication within the organization about how, the stuff is up. People are using it. They are downloading it and making use of it. And it sounds like it was kind of a black box, and you weren't quite sure what was inside of it. And now the job of the organization, how old is Splice?
6 years.
So you're 6 years in, and you have a product that works that people use, but it's almost like a machine learning model where you're like, I don't know what the hell's happening in there. And now we've got you, Brian, kind of going in.
Yeah.
A lot of your work sounds like it's getting one part of the organization to understand what the other part is doing.
yeah,
and what the users are doing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think that I'm in a unique position within the organization of how, like, I have really good visibility into, like, how all of the parts work together.
Mm-hmm.
My job is to help communicate that to the entire organization and just getting everyone to understand the other parts of it.
Right, so it's not about making software, it's about providing context.
Oh, yeah, a lot of it, yeah.
Although you have gotten BigQuery to run Rust.
No? I did. Well,
what's your stack?
Data stack is, we're on GCP for data stack, so Google Cloud Platform.
We are on top of AWS, Amazon Web Services. Oh, okay. Then we use Golang on most of our monolithic APIs. And then we have Angular, a single page app, Angular.
Spa.
Spa. Yeah.
We hang out on the spa.
On Angular. It used to be a collection of Angulars. Now it's only the most recent version.
Do you mean like
except
versions,
for one place? We had AngularJS. I think we don't have AngularJS anymore.
A little bit in some places.
Yeah.
But we've moved
memories.
Kids will be telling the tales of the JavaScript library merging.
Yeah.
Which is in TypeScript, right? Most of the modern Angular is in TypeScript. And then our desktop application is also Angular. It's Electron-based. And then it has a small Go process that helps us with file downloads and low-level things. And our brand new mobile app is Flutter, mm-hmm. which is really cool.
Yeah.
Crazy. Right. That's the coolest.
How is Flutter? How's it going?
Flutter was wonderful. It, of course, has shortcomings like all cross-platform development tools. But
Flutter is from Google, and it's in Dart.
Dart.
Mm-hmm. Which is a language that not many people know or use every day.
Unless you're using Flutter.
Yeah, and it seems to be the killer app for Dart, right?
Yeah.
We built this app in 6 weeks and launched it. So a goal of this...
Don't tell people that. Now there's a ton of developers going to their boss. You know. just kidding.
But we had an old Cordova bundled Angular thing, nightmare, on the App Store for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And we really wanted to modernize our app, but wanted to constrain it. Because there's something that tends to happen in some places where planning is like a gas and like, it fills the entire quarter and we actually don't ship anything.
I love
right?
that analogy.
So this time around we said like, let's use constraints. Let's constrain both engineering, product, and design. Mm. What can we get out in 6 weeks that has value for users?
Wow.
We just went at it and now it's live. We shipped the app without search, which it was one of the constraints.
We
said like,
yeah, we did a soft launch.
Yeah. And yesterday it was the actual public launch and it has, now we can search and fill it. Yeah. Now the real test will be whether we can start doing some advanced and interesting audio stuff with Flutter.
Awesome. Tell us about your first job. I hear you have an interesting story.
Yeah, it was my first job in New York. So I moved to New York after graduating with a creative writing and philosophy degree. Actually, I originally tried to get into publishing here in New York, but every company wanted a year unpaid internship. Mm-hmm. And I can't live on no money.
Turns out that only rich kids can do that.
Only rich kids can do that, yes.
But also creative writing and philosophy.
So I mean, really.
How are you not hireable?
I with those two, I know. Very marketable. From a state school and 2.1 GPA.
Wall Street material.
So, yeah, I was definitely the top of the list. Anyway, decided, you know what? I've been programming kind of my entire life. I did it throughout school to make money. So I'd go back to that and applied for some jobs. One job, the application said it was for New York City, but I had to go up to Nyack, New York to interview. I was like, well, this is okay. All mm-hmm. right, fine. And they said that there would be a New York City development office, which turned out to be a lie. So eventually we just moved over to Tarrytown and I was commuting 2 hours there and back and really liked that company though, as far as the mission. But then we ended up getting this CTO who was not the best. In fact, pretty bad. Yeah. One of his moves that he liked to do would be to hire someone for the same position that someone already had and let them have conflict till one of them quit.
I've seen the double hire.
Yeah.
It's like a truly passive aggressive
classic.
Move.
Oh, absolutely.
I've seen it a couple times.
It could not be worse.
I was in one company where they hired two presidents.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. He hired multiple tech leads. He actually hired someone to be my boss and didn't tell me until I was like in a car ride with this guy. And at this, I knew the most about the stack and this guy, Keith, he was really nice, but he's just like, you don't realize I'm your boss, do you? And I was like, no, I was never told that. And he's like, well, I'm still going to take advice from you because you know the most about the system. But just, you know, if John's around.
I should have tried that with you.
You should have tried that. Yeah, that would have been fun. But yeah, that company ended up spiraling. But I ended up making some good friends and going through fire together. Like one of the things that happened was one of the developers was messing around in the database, like doing some development and didn't realize that one of his Tabs was in production, ended up dropping the production database, which if you run a drop command like manually, it will replicate that. So it also dropped the replica. And our COO comes out and is like, why is the site just a white page? And I look into this, and then I look in our database and there are no tables. And then I look in the replica and there are no tables. And that really could have been like the end of the company. And none of us knew what we were doing. None of us had ever encountered this before. And fortunately, like no one panicked and we ended up staying late that night and like figured out, like Googled a bunch and like figured out that how we could recover it from the binary transaction logs, which thankfully we had turned on. And managed.
Now you know about binary transaction logs.
Exactly. And I will never, ever forget about binary transaction logs. But yeah, just ended up going through and learning a ton from having to do it sort of under fire and with no knowledge about anything. It was really great. First job and made some good friends there, even though the CTO was awful.
That's wild. So you both are organizers or have been organizers, Juan for the JavaScript community in Colombia and Brian for the JavaScript community in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Can you talk about what you see trending in the developer community, what you're excited about when it comes to, because you interact with so many coders in different facets?
Yeah. React still hot. People still love and React.
Vue is rising, though.
Vue is rising. Thinking about what people apply to speak about at Brooklyn.js, I think one of the things that I'm most excited about is WebAssembly.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, just, same.
That was actually, Juan mentioned how I got Rust to run in BigQuery. That was using WebAssembly. Because BigQuery embeds a V8 engine. And I was like, oh, I wonder if it exposes the WebAssembly API. And it does.
It's such nerd catnip.
Oh, yeah.
It's so real.
It's
I can't
amazing.
Wait until PHP can run in the client. Oh, then the web will finally,
What are you doing?
I will make this happen.
PHP just, 7, object-oriented PHP 7 running in the browser.
This is, I love this, Paul. Oh, and I'm going to work.
Oh, my God. Imagine the DOM hooks. And then suddenly a whole world of programmers gets to do front end.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so bad. It's gonna
I'm
be
with
so
Sarah. Yeah. I'm going to prevent that from happening. Yeah.
So we've had a bunch of Rust talks at Brooklyn.js because Rust has sort of one of the best WebAssembly stories right now. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I love Rust. I love WebAssembly. That's kind of like the area that I'm more interested in right now. I moved into management right around when React was getting hot. So like, I feel like I missed it.
Yeah.
And I'm waiting it out now.
Yeah,
I'm
like, because like that with Rails.
Excellent. Yeah. Like, I feel like I know people who did that with Backbone.
Yeah.
And so like, I feel like I can.
No, I had to live Backbone.
I know.
React is not going anywhere.
I know. It's just going to get, more and more entrenched.
Why is typing taking over in front end development?
I think first we discovered unit testing. Mm-hmm. And then we realized that there was a lot of edge cases that we had to test for that typecasting could take care of.
Right, so and you can take care of it before you do this.
Before,
test.
So you don't have to like, well, if it's not a number, then you do this. And if it's a string, then you do, this already takes care of it.
Because unit tests at some level are like the worst type safety system possible.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You're implementing a really crappy type system, half through your unit tests, and it's like, why write those tests if you can have a type system catch it?
It's an integer, damn it.
Yeah, and for me, I think the biggest thing is, while it slows down, it can slow down writing it, I think it makes you more thoughtful about your design going into things, and it makes refactoring so much safer. And for me, that's the biggest thing, is that like the code you write the first time is never going to be right. It's probably not even going to satisfy your business requirements. So it's always like, how easy can it be to rewrite? How can you change things around? And with types, it makes it safer and faster to do that.
Juan, can you talk a little bit about the developer community in Colombia? I'm really interested to hear what you're seeing and like what's trending and what's different about, if anything, like what you see there versus what you see here.
The developer community in Colombia has grown a lot. That has caught us by surprise too. I think, Sarah, you went to Colombia, I think it was 2013 or something like that, right?
Yeah.
The first JSConf Colombia.
Right? It was a really cool conference. The thing I thought was the coolest was the live translations.
We still do that.
Yeah.
And something to note is that at the time that you spoke, about 70% of the folks used the interpretation. Now it's less. Now it's only 30 or 40%. So either the amount of people who speak English who go to a conference is increasing, or people are speaking English more, that's the first thing. The barrier to entry of understanding English and speaking English to get access to the most modern knowledge is, yes, is still an obstacle in non-English-speaking countries. But we've still seen that the same trends that are in the U.S. are making it to Colombia. GraphQL is all over the place.
Yeah,
I do think probably one of the biggest challenges in Latin America, and specifically in Colombia, I'll say, access to opportunities where you get to try these things at scale, like using, yes, GraphQL past your weekend project. There's a lot of people starting companies there because it is cheaper. But we haven't built enough software in Colombia for Colombians or global companies to learn. New York, San Francisco, big tech hubs here have had multiple waves.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully not multiple .coms eras, but a few. Mm-hmm. And that's just learning epochs. And the rest of the world is behind because that's just not, it's not accessible.
There's a big Spanish community on Stack Overflow. And one thing that we love looking into and learning, you know, there is that barrier of entry of English, right? And forcing every coder to learn English is something that definitely creates that's a big step, right? It's not just you have to learn two languages, right? You're learning English and Java, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's something that we're learning a lot about, is how we can make that better.
Yeah. I don't know if there's a real way to solve that.
Mm.
The way that I've approached it in the folks who I've hired is that we do support their English learning.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And we provide access to tools or lessons at some point. And I encourage, when I work with companies who want to hire in Colombia, I encourage them to sponsor classes and sponsor some like conversational exercises so people can really learn how to, yeah, they can cross that barrier and be better engineers.
Yeah, that's great.
It is.
All right, so did you guys see the Excel drum machine? It feels very relevant.
I have not. I missed the tweet.
Okay. Someone built a drum machine in Excel.
Amazing.
Okay, so first, drum machine is pattern-based, right?
Yeah.
So it actually, when you've seen digital drum machines, the idea of it being in Excel isn't that wacky.
Oh, it makes sense. Complete.
I mean,
to some people.
This person did a lot of, is it Visual Basic or whatever the macro language is for Excel?
VBA, yeah, VBA. Yeah.
Mm, let's see if we can play some, because I'm going to be frank, it's not the best drum machine. Like, it is not, but it is clearly a passion project.
Yeah.
I think about this a lot. You know, my first programming language was called C Sound.
C Sound.
Wait, did you create it or is that you learned it?
I learned it.
Okay.
Tell me about C Sound.
I created my first programming language.
I don't know.
No, I know.
He's precocious.
Sarah, I'm an idiot. You are like, this is completely not like, yeah, of course, absolutely. I just started parsing for first principles. It made much more sense.
My first programming language was called Cinderella. Was it
really?
No.
Okay. Yeah. After I independently arrived at the principles of homotological type theory, I thought to myself, I'm going to have a bowl of Captain Crunch and go ahead. No. Instead, C Sound, I was like, gotten out of college, like I knew like a little shell and stuff. And it was, I had my Power Mac and I was doing design. And it was this free language that came out of like the MIT synthesis world, like I think, you know, somewhere in the 80s or late 80s or 90s. And it's, you write instrument definitions as synthesizers and it'd be like oscil one and that would be a sine wave generator. And then you write little score files, which are numbers. I am such a nerd at that point, and I also have no musical talent, like zero. I like to mess around with audio, but I have no skills.
Same.
Mm.
Exactly, right? It's just so much fun. And then once you accept you have no talent, you're like, I'll just support and enable other people.
Or play punk.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, also fun. You can just hammer at an instrument. C Sound lets you write that. So you literally compile to WAV files.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
And then I would use that. I had modified a television to serve as like a low fidelity oscillator.
Wait,
and
I modified
a television.
Yeah. So, no, you'd literally just
mad were your parents?
Oh, no. This is like after college.
Okay.
I didn't know what to do with myself. And you just literally run like electrical straight into the horizontal and vertical, and it's called like a wobble vision, and it lets you draw circles with sine waves and so on. So all I was doing was like, I was making these noises in order to drive the oscilloscope to make weird patterns. And somehow this actually started to get me friends, because people are like, well, this person's clearly right.
I was going to ask, did it get you money? Because you said it was your...
It definitely didn't get me money.
I was like, is someone paying you to do this? Because that's amazing. And how do I get that job?
It is a wonderful way to learn a little programming, though, because making software is hard and arbitrary, and it always breaks.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Making an audio file, you're like, you've made a thing, and it sounds like garbage, but the reality is like not many people do that.
And if it's broken, it can sound cooler.
That's right. You still, like, and you learn from the brokenness. The brokenness is actually a kind of signal.
Yeah.
And then it's like I got in the oscilloscope part because then I could see what was broken. I could see the sine waves.
Debugger.
Sine waves versus sawtooth waves. Like I needed a way to bear witness to that. So there is a whole history of programming. There's Super Collider and there's like, and actually at some level, drum machines and synths are really programmable objects.
Yeah. Is this you justifying building a drum machine in Excel?
Well, this is the thing. it makes a lot of sense.
It does.
Yeah. I don't know. When these things come out, I'm always like, someone's always like, oh, I made a Donkey Kong emulator in Dart. And I'm like, why did you do that?
Learning.
What are you up to?
Fun.
Look,
Sarah, what are you up to?
You make programmable jewelry.
Right.
Sarah.
That's different.
Tell me why you hate fun, Sarah.
Yeah. No, so Splice's technical exercise is to build a drum machine on whatever language you want.
Oh, that's fun.
And now the one for data engineering is going to be build a drum machine in Excel.
Yeah. So this person is already... should reach out to Brian.
Yeah.
Can I use Google Docs?
No, you've opened yourself to help. I don't have Excel.
If they do it in Numbers, extra credit, because Numbers is awful.
Oh, yes. Numbers is terrible. It's drum machine in Numbers would actually be like, you'd have to OCR the screen in real time.
Yeah.
Have any of you guys ever seen mod files? Like Amiga mods? It's another sound. It's like another spreadsheet of sound from back in the day. Like you would just put numbers in to put trigger samples.
Oh, what?
Yeah, and it'd be like, oh, Portamento. And it's just like the numbers just run like the Matrix.
Uh-huh.
And it's all songs with names like, you know, Vengeance Destroyer.
Oh,
from
heck
the demo scene where you know.
Yeah.
It is good. It is good, bad stuff.
Yeah.
All right, so what is the worst thing what's the worst thing we could build a drum machine in?
Hmm.
Excel's
pretty bad.
SQL.
Ooh! Now I want to do it though.
No, because you think about it. Actually, a drum machine would be a series of tables.
Yeah,
like SQLite could totally hack this. It's a good way to store your drum machine files.
Yeah,
you build a huge beat maker in BigQuery. Just make it like a symphony.
Yeah.
All right,
bad cloud platform drum machine.
I have a hot topic for us. Did anyone read the Vanity Fair article about the crypto heist?
No, tell me about the crypto heist.
Buy Bitcoin.
No.
Okay.
Don't buy Bitcoin.
Oh my gosh.
Don't buy Bitcoin. I would prefer if you bought musical samples and didn't use them.
So it happened in Iceland. So Iceland, it turns out, is a great place to mine cryptocurrency. This is something I learned.
Cold?
Because it's cold, and there's a lot of natural power with geysers. So there's a ton of cryptocurrency, and also no crime. It turns out there's like 150 people in jail at all times.
We are destroying the world.
Yeah. Can I say that nowhere is a good place to mine Bitcoin and that nobody should be doing it?
Hey, what can we do with our geysers?
Oh my God.
In the last cold place on Earth.
Let's find
numbers. Heat. Yeah. We can generate enormous amounts of heat as a side effect and destroy Iceland.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Anyway, to make 5 Bitcoins. Anyway, go ahead. Your story's great.
I'm really interested.
This guy. This group, they called it the Ocean's 11 of Iceland.
It's Ocean's Elevenson.
Oh my gosh.
Sven Elevenson. They found a strange man on the internet. A lot of stories.
Easy
start
to
this
do,
way.
By
Easy
the way. Yeah.
It's true.
You need a strange man. I can find a strange man on the internet.
He was like, I will fund a heist if you can get your hands on, it's not even the crypto, it was the hardware. They're like, if you can get your hands on the hardware. So they poisoned a security guard. There was one security guard, and they got $3 million worth of hardware and just started their own mining operation.
So 4 GPUs.
So they heisted a bunch of 3D cards and servers.
Yeah, basically.
In Iceland. I like this guy too. He's like, hey, and like they went to like heistfunder.org.
Right. Yeah. What site did they use for that?
That's on the dark web, definitely.
Yeah.
So they stole 104 Bitcoin computers, power sources, graphic cards, and assorted supplies.
I really hate that there are Bitcoin computers.
Oh, every computer is a Bitcoin computer. If you
I'm sorry to all your Bitcoin head listeners who are going to be like, I can't believe you had these haters on.
Yeah, the guy that funded it was called Mr. X.
Oh, jeez.
No, but that's actually Of course he was.
From Resident Evil 2.
Steven X.
Crypto X-Men.
Yeah, crazy. Okay, guys. How can people find you on the internet?
You can find Juan on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Buritica, Buritica.
And you can find me, Brian, on the internet on Twitter.com, home for all the terrible takes, at Brian Loves Words or at Brian Loves Swords, depending on how you want to read it.
Huh. I guess that's just worth exploring on your own. We don't have to have any more context. What does Splice need? What are you guys looking for in the world?
We are growing most of our engineering teams. We are looking right now for folks who have run Go services in production to expand our backend team. We're looking for people who like Flutter or would like to expand, help us expand our app in Flutter, and front-end engineers as well. And the data team may have some openings at some point.
Yeah, soon. at some point, probably in the next month or two, we'll be thinking about getting a data scientist to start using all the cool data that I've been cleaning.
Okay, so they should go to the Splice website, which is
jobs.splice.com has all our postings. There's also an open posting that I believe you can just sign up and we'll send you new opportunities. We are a fully distributed team across so the Americas, so we will consider your application, of course.
Cool. All right. That's an opportunity if you're out there listening.
Great.
Friends, Juan, Brian.
Paul.
Sarah. Brian. Juan,
Sarah.
Sarah.
Paul.
Ben, who's off mic.
Ben.
Everyone, good show.
Great show.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah,
thank
this is wonderful. Coming. Good content production here today.
I hope you get at least 5 minutes out of this.
Oh, this at least 3 minutes out of this.
All right, y'all. We are going to give a few shout outs to the community and then we are going to wrap it up. So last week we had no lifeboats, but this week we have two. Hooray! How to extract hours and minutes from a date time object, thanks to Shane B.
What language?
Let me see what the tags are on here. This is tagged Python.
That is good.
Quality stuff.
And then our NumPy's basic operations vector.
NumPy's.
NumPy. NumPy. Yeah.
NumPy? Isn't that character from NumPy's, Trolls?
NumPy's like what a small kid calls their parts. Like, don't.
Are NumPy's basic operations vectorized, i.e., do they use SIMD operations? Another Python 3
That's
question.
That's a deep one, actually. Yeah. That's pretty wild.
And we had an amazing post by our own Vicky Boykus on Python 3 just last week, which got huge traffic. She's a super writer. Thanks to Heinrich Strom for the question on numpies, which is how I pronounce it.
No. Then now we have to talk about Sipes.
And thanks to Paul and Sarah for the great chat. Where can folks find you and what do you need?
Yeah, I'm Sarah J. Chips. You can check out New Holiday Gifts for Kids at joelbots.com and find me at Sarah J. Chips on twitter.com.
I'm Paul Ford. I'm F Train on Twitter and I am the co-founder of a software company called Postlight. Boy, are we growing. So if you're an engineer, product manager, or product designer, I would love to hear from you. You can DM me or send me an email at paul.ford@postlight.com.
Wonderful. I am Ben Popper, the director of content at Stack Overflow. I have never said this before, but I will begin saying it now. If you like the show, please go and subscribe, like, rate, and review. It really does help. Thanks, everybody.